Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Welcome to Voice of the Cape. Drive Time 072-238-0712 is the WhatsApp line. Query, comment, and or criticize. It's a fully democratic space. There is widespread anger over reports of tender corruption related to the supply of COVID-19 equipment. Yes, indeed. There is also growing dissatisfaction with government's handling of the lockdown, which entailed a callous indifference to the needs of the poor, who were also at the receiving end of security force violence. This all raises some very serious and pertinent questions about the future of the ANC and Ramaphosa as president. These are just some of the interesting arguments by Professor Raymond Sutter, a scholar in liberation politics, an author, former activist, and a person who has worn many hats over the years. Professor Raymond Sutter, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back on Voice of the Cape.
Pleasure to hear your voice again as well. An interesting point that you've made, and I'm going to sort of dive in right to one of the conclusions that you make in terms of what's happening in our politics, when you suggest that perhaps South Africans should focus not on delivery, which has been the clarion call to date in terms of the government, but more towards accountability. Just tell us more about that interesting point.
That's not what I said. What I said is we must move beyond delivery,
right,
although accountability is important.
Uh-huh.
And I mean accountability for delivery. And then my argument was that we need to think about ourselves being involved in politics, not just voting every 3 or 5 years. I'm not setting accountability against delivery, because delivery entails accountability.
Right, right. I understand you there.
Yeah, sure.
Right, let's have a look at what we're dealing with in terms of the ANC at the moment. I think when the public look at the ANC, they scratch their heads a little bit because they see Ramaphosa on one side, so-called, and the Secretary General of the organization seeming to act at odds to what the president is trying to do, because of, let's see, he seems to enjoy a completely different agenda. How do we get ourselves around this particular problem, which I think is more than a perceived problem?
Well, you see, my argument there is that this is a one-sided fight, and all the time Ismail Shule is doing things which apparently contradict President Ramaphosa. Now, what I feel is ANC headquarters is not controlled by President Ramaphosa.
Uh-huh.
And it's very important for a person who leads an organization to control that organization and not simply act as head of state. Now, when Thabo Mbeki was president of the ANC and of South Africa, every Monday, if I remember correctly, he used to go to Luthuli House and be there. And he had firm control over the organization. So what I'm saying is, what we're dealing with is, you know, some people say this is Ramaphosa's long game, that he waits for the right time and all of that. But Magashule is not waiting. He has populated ANC headquarters with Zuma loyalists.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point you make. Why would people always say that Ramaphosa plays the long game, that he's playing on a chessboard? Is this making excuses for him? How do we understand this aspect of the way that Ramaphosa does things?
You know, this is sort of romanticization of his successes in negotiations. And in negotiations, you have to wait for the right moment. Well, not only in negotiations, in politics generally, you have to wait for the right moment before you do, you make a move. And when Ramaphosa appears paralyzed or to be dithering, his supporters say, well, what he's doing is he's waiting. He believes in the long game. And, you know, one must be patient because it's worked, by implication, it's worked out well in the past, so it's going to work out well now. But, I mean, he's been in office for over 2 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, yes.
And, yeah. And in those years, I don't want to see, I would like to see Ramaphosa succeed, but what does that mean? You know, it's got to have certain content. And what is the content that he's trying to assert? So the long game story, I don't have a problem with the principle, but sometimes you've got to make decisions and you've got to act.
Yeah, sometimes you actually have to have a game.
You have to actually fight. And I think the problem we have now is that the fighting is from one side only. They're not fighting back against the Magashule group.
And the interesting thing about all of this is that South Africans are noticing this. People who are not even politically assessed are also making these kind of observations. Surely that should be a cause for huge concern for the Ramaphosa camp. I'll use that term.
Well, you know, the problem is that you have the stalwart issuing a statement when Ramaphosa said he was setting up some new committee or something like that, and coming out and endorsing it and saying it's very good. And I think no one wants, or very few people want, a return of the Zuma period. So consequently, many of us were prepared to be very constructive with Ramaphosa. Now, I'm not sure how widespread the disillusionment is. However, I do think that there is a sense of outrage over the fraudulence in relation to supply of goods to combat COVID-19. So that is my impression. But I haven't spoken. You know, I've been locked down, so I'm staying at home most of the time.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you what the general person thinks. But that's the impression I have, that there's a lot of anger.
Indeed, and I mean, to me it's significant that a president seen as indecisive is actually able to put a number. This is what I find interesting. 36 cases of corruption in terms of COVID aid. That he was able to actually give a number to it.
Did he give a number? I didn't see that. I'm sure it's more than 36. Why did he only say 36? Because this is happening in just about every province. I didn't see that number, 36. But, I mean, I would have thought it's much more than that.
No, absolutely. It just struck me as a very curious thing to say that he was so confident about those particular numbers, just in terms of the whole corruption landscape, in terms of COVID aid. Something else that comes out of our South African political landscape is the issue of political populism. How do we understand this? Is it people voting for a politician that says something that they want to hear? Is that what populism is about?
See, populism is quite a complicated concept, but the way I understand it is that in a period of disillusionment, as there was in Brazil with the Left Workers' Party, or in America, the cynicism of American politics in general, people swing towards demagoguery. Now, the demagoguery can be of a left kind or of a right kind. And what populism is someone who offers slogans that meet the needs of the poor, but they don't actually have a program. They just have the slogans. And they get swept into power in Brazil and in the United States and in Philippines in relation to things like that. So, and I would call the EFF populist because they also have got all the extremely popular slogans for the poor and for women and so forth and so on, but the way they act is, to me, demagogic.
Indeed, and in fact, to read back to you one of your sentences, and it's important, it is important to be alive to this danger that some of the tendencies in current South African politics are both populist and potentially fascist. And the end of that sentence is quite a warning, isn't it? And then you use the xenophobia, etc., etc., etc. Is this one of the massive pitfalls that we have to avoid?
Well, yeah, I've said this before, because there has been an attempt to link foreign nationals with the spread of disease. Now, when you read what Hitler had to say, he also used disease as a way of scapegoating Jewish people in Nazi Germany. So that the fact that Motsoaledi, the Minister of Home Affairs, when he was Minister of Health, made this association between the flooding of the health, alleged flooding of the health service by foreign nationals and the spread of disease, is a fascist idiom. I'm not saying that they are fascist, but it is a language, part of the language of fascism. And I think the way in which the demagoguery, the way in which people displace blame for things that the government is responsible for onto foreign nationals is the tactics that are often used by right-wing populism and fascism.
Put it another way, perhaps it becomes just a very convenient excuse.
Yeah, look, the thing is, people don't want to take responsibility for what they've done. Uh-huh. And they divert attention by saying foreign nationals are doing this, they're taking your jobs and this, that and the other. Instead of saying, look, we have not created jobs, we've deindustrialized, we've not delivered houses because the foreign people are occupying all the houses. No, that's a displacement of things for which an ANC-led government is in fact responsible.
Now, you ask so many questions. The one question you say, we cannot count on the ANC to get us out of the situation and take the country forward, etc. Then you ask, then who can do it? This is something that I think most South Africans are asking themselves. Is there a way out of this where people don't think the ANC can get us out of the situation? They would like to see an alternative, but at the moment there isn't really a big alternative, let's put it that way. And you mentioned that there are small movements that are kind of starting all over the place. Is that where it begins? Like movements like Amakhlali, for example?
That's what I say, is that we don't restrict our vision of politics to voting. Uh-huh. Because your choice of voting is the DA and the EFF, not much to choose from. And I'm not sure that they will be any better than the ANC. However, in the 1980s, maybe it's before you were born, but in the 1980s, we had popular power. We had street committees. We had people doing things that the state used to do. They would do it themselves in the townships. Uh-huh. And I would like to see that being revived, but it's complicated because to do it in a small scale in a township is different from national. However, there's quite a lot of popular movement, like the Black Lives Matter is a popular movement, but it's mainly protest. So what I'm saying is you need to have popular involvement, not only in protest, but also in directly involved in governmental activities locally.
I think in the 1980s they used to call them the civics, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it's just one thing. The civics is one thing. There were also the youth movements, the student movements, labor movements. They're all part of the popular power.
And of course, there's all of this. I'm not a sort of a learned historian in all of this, but this all seemed to devolve to grassroots level. That seems to be perhaps the key differences between now and then, is that at least in those days there was a sense of grassroots, and even and people perhaps had a sense of belonging, that although their voices wouldn't be heard by a government, it would be heard at some level or another in terms of the anti-apartheid struggle.
Yes, but they also were themselves directly involved. If you have a street committee, and you are in the street committee, you are acting out. You see, ancient Greece, the idea of democracy was direct action. Now, this was a version of that in South Africa. And so what I'm really saying is we have to think it out more in the present period. You can't just go and return to the 1980s. How do we do it today? You know, at the moment, a lot of things are being done with the internet, whereby you can connect people directly in a number of different ways. Now, obviously, connectivity is much better in certain areas than in the poorer areas, but the internet can be a resource for direct involvement of people in their own future and their own politics.
Final question. You know, when we interview young people on this radio station, young South Africans, one does sometimes get a sense of optimism. Here are bright, intelligent people, confident in their shoes. Young people are not stupid. I know it's a cliche, but sometimes we have to say it. Do you think that young South Africans, their voices need to be heard, their ideas need to be heard?
You know, young people who are asking questions, who are genuinely interested in understanding their world, they need to be heard. But, you know, some young people are ruffians, you know, like some old people are ruffians as well.
Right.
So I'm not romanticizing the youth. I think that the youth must be encouraged to try to understand their world, and we must listen to them about their problems.
Professor Raymond Suttner, we could go on for a very long time with this very interesting discussion, but thank you for talking to us live on Voice of the Cape Drive Time, and stay safe.
Thank you very much. You also stay safe. Thanks. Okay. Bye. Drive.